In story time, we like it because everybody has different career paths and such. And you know what? You started out. You're born in Manitoba. Then, of course, you play your dub years with the Broncos and the Prince Albert Raiders. And your last 2 years, the Raiders, pretty competitive teams, going to the third round, both fourth round to the WHL final in '96, actually. And then you got drafted by the Buffalo Sabres in 1994. But let's go back to were you always a defenseman at a young age when you started playing?
No. So I was going to say, you guys probably talk. I didn't take the fast track. I hope you got a lot of time.
Oh, yeah, we do. We love it.
For you, we do.
And I love you bringing up the old WHL days. There was that Kamloops team every year. I got stuck in that bad era, I'll tell you that.
Although we like playing against the Bulls.
I couldn't get past the Wheat Kings to get to the Kamloops Blazers. But, you know what? I was a forward all my life. I was a forward, so I started junior in Swift Current. And I went there as I was an underage. So, I did the I had the complete junior experience under and over, but I was really an under. I didn't turn 16 till, my birthday's what, Sunday, so November 8th. So I was 15 years old, and, I'm a kid out of a town of 3,500 people in Neepawa, Manitoba. I was planning to go back and play for the junior A team. Heavy Evison was the coach, the late Heavy Evison, great man, Dean's brother, who's head coach of Minnesota Wild, and had a great camp. They wanted to keep me around, and I don't want to take this story time dark, but of course the coach at that time of the Swift Current Broncos is none other than Graham James. And my mom thinks back to the scary times of a 15-year-old and a man promising to look after his son, which was all fine with me. I had a great relationship with my family and I never had an issue. But it was, I played sparingly that first year, but I really learned a lot practicing at that level. And then the next year, Graham and actually Rob Dom was the assistant, a real good man. And they felt I had a lot in my game that would benefit maybe trying to play defense. The one thing I didn't have was skating backwards. which is kind of important. Which is, it's strange. I think, players now are, so more adept to, forwards, backwards, their skill set. Back then, not a lot of, forwards were able to skate backwards. And I remember working on it, daily. I, spent extra time. Rob Dom was really instrumental in that for me as the assistant coach. And, I made the transition to playing defense that year in the Broncos, and I had a great start, just to tell you how worthy it was, I won the prestigious prize of the Plus Minus Award for the first month of October and got a brand new pair of cowboy boots in Swift Current. That was the that was the award. And I think I had them until about a few years ago. I finally, I had to cut the cord on them. But it worked out for me really well, just being able to see the ice. I think I always thought the game well. My foot speed maybe wasn't where it needs to be, and that's why they thought playing defense would be best. And and then unfortunately came January. I'll never forget. Strud, did you play with Keith McCambridge?
Oh yeah, Keith McCambridge and Ashley Buckberger.
Yeah, so they were two of my best friends at the team at the time. Both Ashley, we were all rookies together. And that second year came in January, and we're top in the league. Swift Current was a really good team, and I remember Keith and I, they're like, they're going to make a trade. And he'll still give it to me nowadays. I talked to him maybe 3 weeks ago. And we always bring up the story. I was the one that went to, we were both Manitoba boys. We always drove together back and forth. He had an old Trans Am that we had to put like a 79 Trans Am T-top. Then we thought we were the coolest guy, but we had to stop about every every 70 miles to put a quart of oil in it on our trips back between Manitoba and Swift Current. But I thought I had the trade deadline, and we knew Swift Current was going to make a move because they were a Memorial Cup favorite. And I remember going to him, I'm like, oh man, I don't want to see it go. And he's like, yeah, whatever, we'll see what happens. I'm like, oh, it's going to suck, because we hung out. Next thing you know, it was me who was traded to Prince Albert. So it went from first to worst. right. To the Raiders, who had, at that time when I got there, I think there was 12 of us who were 17. But it ended up working well because it became we became a real powerhouse. You know, it was tough at the time, but a real eye-opening experience. Had a grad date and everything set. It was my grade 12 year, and packed up my K car and drove from one part of Saskatchewan to the other.
Joined by Shane Knighty in story time and nights. You know, it's funny. Look at those times, and there's so many great guys on those Broncos teams and the Raiders. But you get to Prince Albert, and that rink, I remember we drive there from Kamloops. It'd be minus 200. And then there was guys like Brad Church and Shane Toporowski. Yeah. They just wanted to kill us. And Dennis Peterson. Like, well, what, it was a pretty good little core you guys had there.
Well, we had a great core. Ryan Bast.
Yes.
Mitch Shawara was our tough guy who was, like, not very big, but, you know, go toe-to-toe with the late Wade Belak like there was no tomorrow. I'd never seen anybody eat a punch better. But, you know, you always had those guys then. And, yeah, we really had a really close group in Prince Albert. And you know, I heard you mention our, you know, our two kind of Eastern Conference Finals with the Wheat Kings. The one we were kind of surprising came in, that was Dennis Peterson's last year. Man, we lost in, I think we lost in game seven. That was the first time TSN ever covered, I believe, WHL hockey. They ended up covering like game four, and then they carried the rest of the series. It was kind of exciting for us at that age. And then the next year when I went away and I came back, I was captain, and that was a really talented, we traded for like Curtis Brown and Roman Volpat that year, and had a real stacked team, again, lost to Brandon Wheat Kings. So, great experiences in junior. I love Prince Albert, and it was cold. I remember, and these were the days when, you know, coaching was a little different. And I'll never forget one practice, Donnie Clark. I forget where we drove back from. But, you know, when you put your equipment, you finish the game, you put it under the bus, you drive back home, and he said, okay, everybody on the ice. And I remember first time I ever taken my equipment. Well, you always did, but you had to peel it apart. You grabbed an elbow pad, the shin pads, the pants, everything came together. Yeah. It was frozen solid.
Yeah.
Why did he do that? Was he just unhappy with your performance?
He was unhappy. I remember that was one of them. Yeah, unhappy with their performance. Another one was at home. We lost. He came in the next morning. He said, put on half gear and running shoes. And I don't know if it was Donnie Clark. It might have been Chris Stewart. I had a few coaches, but he just said, start running this way. When you see my truck, turn around. Okay.
Shane Knight. Now, Shane, that year in 95, 96, you had Chris Phillips, of course, was on that team. Yep. You mentioned Volpat. You also had Steve Kelly, who had been a top pick by the Edmonton Oilers. He led your team in scoring, had 101 points. Like, when you look, was Steve Kelly one of the best junior players who just never was able to make it as a pro that you knew?
Yeah. You wonder, I hate to bring this up. I know you guys are in Edmonton. Isn't that the Doan year?
Yeah.
Draft when Steve Kelly went before Shane Doan. You know what?
And the draft was in Edmonton, too.
I know. You're right. It was in Edmonton. But Steve, at that time, and this is why, you know, when you evaluate hockey players now, it's so hard. I think it's different now, but it's hard to evaluate an age. And Steve Kelly could skate like the wind. Silky smooth, his stride. You know, I think there's a little bit of a temper problem there. I think he's a cop now in Vernon, so I should be careful what I say.
Well, because I was going to ask you, he had over 200 PIMs. Like, did he have a short fuse, or was he more aggressive than I remember?
And none of them were from fighting. It was all he had a temper when something didn't go his way, and a lot of 10 minutes when they counted him back then would be the majority of those penalty minutes for him, or a slash or retaliation. And you know, I think that was, you know, part of maybe a negative of his game, but certainly the skill was undeniable. And, you know, it's hard to know. You look at him, you watch him play, certainly. Skill-wise, all the attributes were there, what he could do to be dynamic. But, you know, there's that mental part of the game that's just as important that I don't think really evolved for him.
Talking with Shane Knighty for a story time. And Knights, you were a seventh-round pick to the Buffalo Sabres. And, you know, we're going to get into your pro career. But, you know, why you? Why did you make it and have a good NHL career when there would have been 172 guys taken in front of you?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think it was the and I went to the draft, so it was in Hartford, Connecticut. Which, you know, if we're doing story time, it was. I'll never forget the fifth round. And I was ranked, you know, back then when you opened up the TSN Hockey News, or the Hockey, not TSN, but the Hockey News was like an actual newspaper. And they came out with the rankings and whatever. And I think I was around like the high 60s, let's say. And, you know, so we figured, you know, wouldn't go there, but maybe, you know, fourth round. And I'll never forget sitting there in the stands and the Boston Bruins come up. And I think it was around 150 somewhere. Oh, I'd have to, you guys could probably Google this, but they announced, the Boston Bruins got up. We'd like to announce from the Prince Albert Raiders. And I'm like, you know, you start to peek up. Defenseman. So I remember I kind of like half got out of my seat. And they go, Darren Wright. I'm like, oh, and I sat back down. I guess that's not me. one of those premature situations where I kind of half raised out of my seat and I have to wait two more rounds. But you know what? And that's what it is for any kids listening. The draft, yeah, if you're going for a second round, it's a big deal. But beyond that, you know what? Don't give up. There's always hope. It's not easy, but stick with it. And I think that's kind of, you know, that was one of those hurdles or obstacles in the career that maybe motivated me a little bit more. I'm like, well, my numbers are way better. You know, it kind of, and I like Darren Wright. He was a tough physical defenseman, but I'm like, I'm better than him. And that, you know, you kind of compare yourself, and I think it, you know, gives you a little extra drive to prove people wrong, and it helped.
Cup. Now, Shane, before we get to your pro career, I do want to ask about a good friend of our show, Joaquin Gage, who was your goaltender with the Prince Albert Raiders in 93-94. What story do you remember of Gager back then?
Oh, one pops to the top of the head that I can't repeat, but...
well, you could.
And I'm sure he knows it, too, but you know what? He was one of those goalies that came back with like some experience and great guy. Got along really well with Gager, funny man. Yeah, not long enough time together, but certainly some good times, some good memories that you know. You think back to junior, and those are some of the ones that really stick out. Yeah, I loved every part of junior. I loved the bus ride. I know it's crazy, but I loved the bus rides and the camaraderie, everything with the guys. I was all in for all of that.
100%. It was so much fun. And, you know, I've asked Gager this before, and I need to get your opinion. The rumor when we played against Joaquin Gage was that he couldn't see the puck if we shot from outside the blue line. So we'd always hammer pucks in from out there thinking he wouldn't see. As a teammate, can you confirm or deny the rumor that's been circulating for over, I guess it's been 25 years, about Joaquin Gage and his inability to see the puck outside the blue line?
Well, I don't know if he couldn't see, or I don't know, he didn't really care until he came across the blue line. he's probably one of those goalies that just, you know, just whatever, just relax. And then once he came in, okay, now I'll get serious. Like, he certainly had the ability. He was a tremendous goaltender. But, yeah, I don't know about his passion outside of, you know, watching him go the other way.
Shane Knight joins. So, Shane, you know, you mentioned about the 94 draft and you thought you should have went higher, so maybe that spurs you on. You play two more years of junior, then you turn pro with the St. John Flames. But you also played in Baton Rouge. So did you start that year in the ECHL in Baton Rouge?
Yeah, so the draft for Buffalo was really quick. It was a 94, so basically that was what year? The strike. So no camp for me after getting drafted, which was disappointing. Then the next year, I had a really good camp. There's so many, so I'll try and get through it quick. The most memorable thing about my very first camp is I got sent down to Rochester. Rochester went on to win that year. Their head coach was John Tortorella. And John Tortorella wanted to keep me. We had an exhibition game across the border in Canada, and I can't remember where it's on YouTube. So I just did a radio show, and somebody pulled up. There's a YouTube clip. One of the scariest moments of my life. We had a bunch of fights. I fought someone, but Sean Gagnon was on the Rochester team. He fought John Baduk, who was the toughest. I believe we were playing Syracuse.
Yeah.
So we go to the penalty box. I'm already in. John Baduk is irate at Gagnon. He climbs the penalty box, comes through. The linesmen pull everybody out but me. And John Baduk comes over the top, like top rope, top glass. And it was my first cage match ever. John Baduk climbing He climbed through the timekeeper area, across to the other side, dropped down, and him and I wrestling around in the penalty box before they could peel us apart. That's not a, you know, that image I'll never forget. And it's out there somewhere. But anyways, yeah, it didn't last with Buffalo, and I did go to Baton Rouge. And do you guys know who the head coach was there?
In Baton Rouge? Oh, is that NBC guy, McGuire?
That's Pierre McGuire.
Yes!
Come on. Jeez.
Yeah, so I went down there for 2 months. And Strud, you'll even like this. My roommate was Bob Westerby.
Oh, come on. Holy jeez. You're like the Forrest Gump of hockey. You played and were coached by everybody.
Yeah, so I roomed with Bobby. Well, Bob was he was with Rochester that year before, so I knew him from camp. We hung out. And then, you know, a year later, and, you know, I finished my junior career. I went to Blackhawks camp on a tryout. It wasn't good. I was going to go to Acadia University, and Pierre called me to come down and play. And Pierre McGuire was the first one to ever really give me that, you know, he's like, kid, you can make it. I remember I fought a guy named Kevin Evans twice in one exhibition game. He's like kind of the Ogie Oathorpe of that. He's like the all-time penalty minute leaguer. And I did really well. And, you know, and I had a good start. And then, yeah, Pierre gave me that first thought in my head that, you know, there's possibility that maybe I could do this. And I got called up to St. John and finished a year there. And then that was enough of the AHL. I did the ECHL, AHL 1 year. I switched over to the IHL in Grand Rapids. And that year was that was fun. That was when the IHL was – there was a lot of guys that had played. Yeah. The NHL came down. Terry Huffman was a big – was really influential for me then. You know, he came from Philadelphia, the Flyers, a great career there, and then kind of took me under his wing. Pokey Redick, who actually coaches my kids' team down here in Vegas, was one of our goalies. You know, you had all those guys sprinkled around the IHL then, and it was a tough league. I think I had like 20-some majors that year. It was just but it got me noticed, and I finally got my first pro deal with the Detroit Red Wings. Unfortunately, it was right in the middle of their back-to-back Stanley Cup Hall of Fame years, where Hall of Fame coach and Scotty Bowman, 2 years there. I think in the 2 years they called up two, maybe three guys. So... wasn't much, and then from Detroit, Ottawa traded for my rights, and that was probably the best thing that ever happened. I heard about the phone call. I got called. I was fishing with my dad and brother in a Manitoba northern lake. There was no cell phones, and just the camp guy came over and said, "There's an emergency to call home." I had to go to a payphone, talk to Marshall Johnson, who was the GM of Ottawa. I said, "We traded for you." I said, "Okay. Sounds good." And I remember going back with my brother and dad. We sat down, we had some more rum and played some cards, and we strategized about what I needed to do.
What now in that strategy session, what did you feel you needed to do? Because obviously it worked.
You had to stand out. And that was, you know, and it was interesting because it was a perfect scenario. It was kind of like a perfect storm. Ottawa was always, I always say that, you know, the early 2000 Senators were built for post 04-05 lockout.
Yeah.
Because they were high skilled, they're fast, they were, you know, there wasn't a lot of physicality to that team. You know, I think they had Lance Pitlick, who just signed a big deal, left, kind of had that. And they didn't have anybody else, you know, Andre Wall. And yeah. I went in, and that, I was lucky that was the year when it was uncommon and looked down upon for a player to sit out a year. Well, who had sat out a year? Alexi Yashin. He was in camp, and I'll never forget the first scrimmage. I remember talking to my agent. He said, "Just go after him." I said, "Nobody's going to do anything." And I played that scrimmage like there was no puck. I just, anytime I saw Yashin on the ice, I cross-checked, hacked, whacked, went after him, did everything I could. And sure enough, I think it was Don Brennan, who, you know, loves that stuff, wrote an article, and all of a sudden, and then I had a good camp from then, and you know, there's a couple injuries. Rickard Pearson broke his ankle. Rickard Pearson's my favorite, a great guy. Played D with him, Swedish player. Broke his ankle, so I was able to stay to make the team. They sent me down right around Halloween. I went down to Grand Rapids as an affiliate. I was there for, I think I went down, played one game, and then Pearson came back. He played a game, broke his ankle, same ankle, 2 inches higher. They called me back up, and I never left.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Like, you know, you talk about standing out because that was the way I felt too. Like, I'm going to come in here. I'm going to do whatever I have to. I don't care who you are, what you've done. Like, you've got to stand out because if you just go in and you just blend in, they're like, oh, well, he filled the jersey. Like, and it's a little bit different now. I don't know how guys can do that as much. But back then, I mean, I remember Todd Simpson told me that. He's like, go out there. Don't let him deny you. Just be a bully in training camp. And I bullied my way into a job.
Yeah, and it's so true. You needed, especially, you know, unless you're a high pick, you know, I was 24 at that time and, you know, I'm like, well, I felt I could make the plays. I was smart enough to understand the game, but there had to be, you know, an element that I had to display that would make me, you know, make everyone say, okay, who, you know, and at that time it was like, you know, I think the reason I took number 34 was eventually the lowest I got. It might have been that camp because usually I was like numbers, you know, 70, 78 or you know, whatever those camp numbers. Yeah. You never got a low one. And I think 34 was the lowest I got. I didn't know it was a goalie number at the time, but I was so excited. Oh, this is pretty low. Maybe this means something. And it ended up being my number. But, yeah, and it was. It was the time I felt my career that, okay, let's take a chance. Let's go out, and that's all I did. I chased Yashin around, and nobody did a thing. And it's funny you mentioned Todd Simpson. That's how I got the nickname the Sheriff, was playing Florida not much longer afterward. Todd Simpson and Peter Worrell went after Yashin because, as I said, sitting out was not looked upon as normal back then.
Yeah.
And I came flying into the pile and ended up getting a fight kind of with both of them to protect Yashin, and the next day it said Sheriff Shane Knighty to the rescue.
Oh, hey, that's a good moniker to have. The best part is 34. That was like Strutty's favorite number for the longest time until he could get 43. As Shane Knighty joins us on Edmonton Sports Theater, TSN 1260. And Shane, you know, you're with the Senators. You mentioned that team in 01-02. You guys had a really good team. But, you know, Toronto was a little bit of a nemesis at that time and, you know, maybe lacked a little grit. Then you were in Nashville for a very brief time. You got traded there at the deadline. Then you go to, and you played during the lockout for a year. You played 19 games in the ECHL. Were you considering going to Europe? What made you decide to play in the East Coast for another stint?
Oh, well, I was with Nashville, and I'd been in Manitoba, my cottage, till December, and they wanted me to go play somewhere. And, you know, I had kids at the time. I remember Jeremy Stevenson was a teammate of mine in Nashville. And they told him the same thing. And I said, well, if we're going somewhere, let's go somewhere warm. Let's look at the East Coast League. And at that time, we were like, well, Charleston, South Carolina, or Estero, Florida, either sounds good. Estero needed a D-man. Charleston needed a forward. I'm like, perfect. And I got reunited with Brad Church, who's the captain down in Florida. And Jerry Fleming, who I'd played against, who was one of the scariest humans ever. Was
the head
coach.
Yes.
And, thank you. You know what? It worked out. I remember we had Christmas, a great Christmas with the family, which was rare to have in Manitoba. And then we packed up and, you know, at that time, my oldest was just in grade one and drove down and went to Florida. And, you know, it was great. Everybody lived in the same apartment complex. He had like Sunday barbecues by the pool. And I had a bit of visa issue, which is why I only got 19 games. We ended up going to the Kelly Cup finals and losing to Trenton.
Yeah.
So it was a great experience. I don't know if it was my best hockey I ever played, but I sure had a lot of fun.
Shane Knighty joins us. Then you come out of the lockout. You're with the Thrashers, the Ducks, the Bruins. Tell me, so you were with Boston for 2 years. Then you were with Minnesota. And then you came back to the Bruins. And, of course, that's the year you guys won the Stanley Cup in 2011. And then you retired, Shane. Talk about kind of those last few years and what brought you back to Boston in 2010-11.
Well, there was a fit in Boston that was unlike any other. You know, I signed as a free agent with Anaheim. It didn't work out. It was right after they won the Cup. And it's kind of funny because, you know, you had this sense Scott Niedermeyer was retired. And at that time, you're playing, and all of a sudden, the announcement he's coming back, we're like, well, somebody's going here. Like, he hadn't played. I remember I played a couple games when he first came back. And, you know, we'd all been doing camp. Came back in December. He came, played 24 minutes. He, you know, he pulls his shirt off after the game. His hair's bone dry. And, you know, I'm in my third shirt. I switch every period. I'm drenched from my, you know, 12 minutes of ice time. And he's like, yeah, I'm like, okay, well, somebody's going. And it was me. And I get traded right after the new year to Boston. And going to Boston, there was just a fit there. I knew a bunch of the guys that were already there. I played with Chara.
I knew, I think at that time, Peter Schaefer, Glenn Metropolitan, there was a few guys. Sean Thornton ended up becoming a really good friend of mine. It was a real good fit, that style. And, you know, we had young guys like Milan Lucic. It was just, the big bad Bruins was just emerging again. And it was a fit for my style, and I loved it. Unfortunately, I had some knee issues, knee surgery, and they didn't re-sign me, so I went to Minnesota. I tried to go back there, and then the next year out of Minnesota, they didn't want me at that time, and I went. It was the first time in my career. I was 34, and I went to Arizona on a PTO, had a great camp. We were talking contract. They're like, all right, let's talk in the next couple days. Let's get this sewn up, and I went out, and it was a simple drill. I got hit, like, not hard in the boards, and I heard a click in my shoulder. Tried to fight it off for a week, finally MRI, and it was a torn rotator cuff, 6 months. So, you know, back to Winnipeg, I go. Arizona did a great job looking after everything. They brought me down to make sure treatment. And at that time, the guy who did it was one of the top MLB surgeons. So, their rehab was advanced. I think Mark Streit may have got the same thing at that time. He didn't return that year. But anyways, I got a call from Boston, and, you know, it's, I think my wife said she was tired of my lazy behind around the house moping in November. She said, why don't you get back to work? If you get back to work, I bet you Boston will pick you up and they'll go on a long run, something like that. She made a prediction that was wild. Anyways, I did, and I stopped feeling sorry for myself. Boston did call, and they said, we'd like to bring you in. It's going to be, you know, we need leadership. We need you for that room presence. And I think, you know, I think back, and Judd's made too, you know, a healthy scratch earlier in my career, how you pout, but made me realize how important a role on the team is, regardless of what you are and how important you can be as a leader, whether you're playing or not. And being out of the game, it took for me to realize that. And I'm like, whatever. And I busted my ass to get back. And I went out and saw them in January to see the doctors. And then I think it was in February, I joined them in Vancouver. I did a couple practices, and then they signed me to a contract. And I didn't play a game. I wasn't cleared to play until, I believe, beginning of April. So it was almost a year, because we didn't make playoffs in Minnesota. So I think our last game was like April 8th or 10th. So, and I played a few games at the end of the year, and then a few in playoffs, but mainly brought in to be a voice in the room. And to, you know, I did every warm up right up until game 7 of the final, you know, and in the room with a little speech. And, you know, it was one of the most memorable things. And maybe it wasn't exactly the way I typed it up to win a Stanley Cup, but just as important.
Well, Shane, man, a great career. Love the story time, and hopefully we're talking Vegas hockey and the Oilers, and who knows if they're in the same division, might not be, but hopefully the NHL is starting in 2021. Thanks, as always, for taking the time to join us. We really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for letting me go down Amnesia Lane here with you.
It was awesome.